Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
This is Dr. Jennifer Daniels, and you are listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit VitalityCapsules.com and get your free gift, Remedies So Powerful, They May Make Antibiotics Obsolete. Excuse me. And that's VitalityCapsules.com. As always, I welcome your calls and questions, so please call in at 914-338-0695. I'm going to get a glass of water because I have this tickle in my throat. There you go, the water cure. Well, today's topic is really a bombshell. Our topic today is the pernicious therapy of Parkinson's disease. And we're going to look at it from two angles. The first angle is, what drugs commonly prescribed give rise to Parkinson's disease when they're prescribed as directed in their therapeutic doses? So that's the first thing we're going to look at. Second thing we're going to look at is, okay, if you take therapy for Parkinson's disease, then what happens? And so, as always, you know, I pick these topics and a few people recommend them or suggest them. So if the topic you want to hear about, actually, you can just go to the VitalityCapsules.com website, click Contact Us, and make a suggestion. And so this topic was suggested. It actually, Parkinson's disease was just the most puzzling disease in medical school. Because we were taught that, of course, neurological disorder, and when you give medications for Parkinson's disease, the medications could make the person worse. So if a person with Parkinson's disease gets worse, sometimes you increase the medication, and sometimes you decrease the medication. And it was never clear to me how would you know whether to do one or the other. So I naively thought that the coarsest thing to do was to send the person to the specialist, and the specialist would know. And as you're going to find out today, it's not as fruitful and beneficial as one might hope. So let's dive right in. We're going to start with the very basics. We're going to start with the basic, and bring you up to speed. So you'll know as much as any doctor knows about Parkinson's disease. And you'll also know the mysterious secret as to why therapy is so pernicious. So first of all, who gets Parkinson's disease? That's important to know. It's like, you know, why worry, right? It turns out that the frequency of Parkinson's disease increases with age. So generally, people over 50 are diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. However, lately, there's been an incredible rise in people under the age of 40 being diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. And that's very odd. There's a big increase in people under 40 having Parkinson's disease. And men get it more often than women. White people get it more often than blacks. And this is very curious. Now, when I was in medical school, I was taught that there actually is a difference between blacks and whites. It's cultural, genetic, whatever, but it's a pretty big difference, and you really have to pay attention to these black-white differences. As a human being, in my personal experiences, just kind of day-to-day life, I really didn't see a big difference. However, there is a big difference financially. Generally, whites have more income than blacks. This is despite any whatever segregation change, whatever. So if whites have the disease more often than blacks, and chances are what's causing this is something that people spend money on. So keep that in mind, because we're going to find out exactly what this is. The Mayo Clinic is going to give us the answer. So we're going to find that out later on this evening. I'll talk about that. It's absolutely fascinating. So whites get this more than blacks. So this is a case where having more cash can ruin your health. It also affects only 50,000 people a year in the United States. And that's actually a pretty small number of people to be affected by a particular disease. So, I'm sorry, 50,000 people are diagnosed every year, but 500,000 are affected at any one time. And, of course, the medical literature believes that a lot of people are going undiagnosed. And having more money, higher social status, or living in a particular area does not seem to reduce your risk of getting Parkinson's disease. And there are no tests that can confirm the existence of Parkinson's disease. And it's believed by modern medicine that there is no cause. And so a person with Parkinson's disease will have a normal CAT scan and a normal MRI. I've just mentioned about $7,000 worth of testing at least. Depending on where you get it, it may even be $20,000 worth of testing, and it's going to be negative. There are some associated issues, like if you had a head injury early in life, you might get Parkinson's later on. It is associated with deterioration or shrinkage of the brain. I'm putting that in English for you. If you were a doctor, we would call it elevopunticular cerebellar atrophy, but we don't need to say all that. We can just say it seems to shrink up. Now, there is an association with Huntington's disease. So if you have Huntington's disease, you're likely to get Parkinson's disease, which is interesting. And if you have Alzheimer's disease, you're very likely to get Parkinson's disease, which is also interesting, since they're all neurological diseases. So what is Parkinson's disease, and how do you know if you have it? Well, first of all, we've probably all seen these people who have a hand tremor, and this hand tremor is a tremor at rest. So the hand is not doing anything in particular, but it's just constantly trembling, and the fingers are just moving like the person's rolling a pill, but there's no pill in their hand. It's also characterized by depression. So if you have a hand tremor, you're depressed, constipated, you have a sleep disorder, you're demented, then chances are you have Parkinson's disease. But there's more. Late-stage Parkinson's can have difficulty swallowing, a very slow speech, urinary difficulties, skin problems, and sexual problems. Also, slow shuffling gait, and even stiffness with difficulty or inability to move, a stooped posture, reduced facial expression. Doctors call it a masked face. So the face looks like a mask. And the voice becomes a very soft speaking voice. And the limbs become rigid, achy, stiff, weak, and there's a very kind of slow movement. So from the time the patient decides to move, the time they actually move, is actually very slow. And this impediment can come and go, so it's very unpredictable. And Parkinson's people are especially prone to falls, and because they get very stiff and their body will lean forward or backward, and then they don't have the strength to turn that around. So now we know what it looks like, what the symptoms of Parkinson's disease. I first want to emphasize my station here. You're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit VitalityCapsules.com and get your very important report, Natural Remedies, So Powerful They Could Make Antibiotics Obsolete. And these are the actual remedies I used in my medical practice that actually did make antibiotics obsolete. In other words, I just didn't have to prescribe antibiotics anymore. So that was very exciting for me, and I hope that you enjoy that report. So that's VitalityCapsules.com. And as always, I welcome your calls and questions. So please call 914-338-0695. Now, so So we know what Parkinson's looks like. That description, you should be able to spot anyone on the street who's got Parkinson's, and you'll have an accuracy equal to, maybe even better than that of most doctors. So this person's going to be prone to falls, they're going to move slowly, jerky movement, reduced facial expression, and have a hand shuffle, like a hand tremor and shuffling gait. All right, so we've got this person tagged, and you're going to keep in mind that later on the program, you're going to learn why whites have this disease more often than blacks, and you're also going to learn why there's a big increase in people under 40 getting Parkinson's disease. So now we know, in the course of living, in the course of prescribing medications, medications have what are often referred to as side effects. I like to refer to them as predictable effects. These are not effects that might happen. These are effects that do happen, that will happen, that have happened in the past, and will continue to happen as long as the medication is prescribed. We also know from studies done by people who should know, establishment authorities, that if a person takes $1 in medications, it means they're going to require at least $3 in medical care to address the harm done by the medication. So let's get started. Let's take a look at medications that cause Parkinson's disease. And these medications cause Parkinson's disease when prescribed as directed by the PDR. So when prescribed by a competent doctor in therapeutic amounts, these things cause Parkinson's disease. First drug I'm going to talk about is Exelon. Now, Exelon is a drug used to treat dementia. So if someone's demented, it's a good chance they're going to get Exelon. And if they take Exelon, there's a chance that they're going to get Parkinson's disease. Now, as you can see, Alzheimer's is associated with Parkinson's disease. So it's not that the same thing that causes Alzheimer's causes Parkinson's disease. It's that, as we can see here, the treatment for dementia causes Parkinson's disease. Now, just to make things really simple for you, or just easier to keep track of, there are other dementia medications that cause Parkinson's disease. And the other one is Namanda. So Namanda is a medication recommended for the treatment of dementia, and it reliably causes Parkinson's disease. Now, another drug that causes Parkinson's disease is Fanapt. Now, Fanapt is a psychiatric drug for schizophrenia. And schizophrenia is a psychiatric illness that generally shows up in life somewhere in the adolescent years and the 20s. And this drug, Fanapt, causes Parkinson's disease. And so the availability of these drugs, the increased use of these drugs, I think definitely explains the increase in Parkinson's in younger people. Now also, there's another drug called Invega, another one called Moban, Safris. These are all schizophrenic drugs. So all these drugs are used to treat schizophrenia, and they give rise to Parkinson's disease. And one real shocker in the list is Risperdal. Now, those of you who follow the ADHD, ADD, ODD discussion as to whether young kids should be diagnosed with ADHD and be put on Risperdal, this is one thing that we now know happens. So someone taking Risperdal in therapeutic doses prescribed by a competent physician has a reasonable risk of developing Parkinson's later in life. And again, as you can see, giving these drugs at a younger age, let's say teen years, you're going to end up, if you get Parkinson's, getting it before the age of 40. So that's really a shocker. Seroquel, another ADHD drug, causes Parkinson's. It's used for ADHD, for bipolar disease, for treating common depression, as well as schizophrenia, and it gives rise to Parkinson's disease. Zyprexia is another shocker. This one is used for bipolar disorder and schizophrenia, and 20% of people who receive Zyprexia can expect to go on to get Parkinson's disease. You might want to call that one just a Parkinson's moneymaker. Then we have another drug, Xenazine. 15% of people who take that go on to get Parkinson's disease. And Xenazine treats what? It treats Huntington's disease. And you see that there's an association between Huntington's disease and Parkinson's disease. And so a person gets Huntington's disease, they get treated with Xenazine, and then they get Huntington's and Parkinson's disease. So this is really I think, more than the average of $3 expense, or I should say $3 increased revenue and profit for every $1 pill prescribed. So this is serious moneymaker here. And so it's really shocking that as awful a disease as Huntington's is, Huntington's chorea is a very bad disease, to treat it with a drug then gives the poor person Parkinson's on top of their Huntington's is, I would say, in the order of inhumane, to be just really blunt about it. Then Lamictal, which is a seizure medication, and it's also used for ADD, is believed to worsen Parkinson's disease. Now, that's interesting because if you think about it, you can have someone who has what you might call early Parkinson's or super mild Parkinson's, where the symptoms are really minimal and don't even interfere with their life. And giving that kind of person something like Lamictal would push them further along the spectrum into a level of Parkinson's that would be tremendously damaging to their quality of life. And then another shocker is Rayquip. Rayquip is actually a Parkinson's medication. It's a medication used to treat Parkinson's. And if you look in our special PDR, remember we're using a special PDR, which is a PDR for side effects, indications, and contraindications. And Rayquip is known to worsen Parkinson's disease. And so that's a real shocker. Now, another medication is Statovo. Now, Statovo is another Parkinson's medication. This is a basic or classic Parkinson's medication, carbidopa/levodopa. And this is the Parkinson's medication that was used when I was in medical school, way back when in the dark ages, in the early 80s. And this medication is still being used today, and it can make Parkinson's worse, or it can increase or cover up the symptoms. There is absolutely no known medication that cures Parkinson's, delays the progression of Parkinson's, or helps people live longer with Parkinson's. So there's absolutely no medication for that. But it's still believed that Rayquip reduces the symptoms of Parkinson's. So that's very, very interesting. Not Rayquip, but Statovo. Now then there's Actimmune, which is interferon used for idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. So you can imagine, this poor person is idiopathic, means the doctor doesn't know what it's about or what causes it. Pulmonary fibrosis, so having difficulty breathing, you give them Actimmune, which is the recommended therapy, and now they have difficulty breathing and difficulty walking. So that's very, very difficult. And if a person has allergies and you give them EpiPen, which is common, to prescribe EpiPen kit, so a person can self-administer epinephrine for an allergy, using that worsens Parkinson's disease or accelerates the symptoms. Then, of course, there's Exelon, which we've mentioned before, for dementia. So the Exelon causes Parkinson's, and if you have Parkinson's and you're taking it, it can worsen Parkinson's. So you can see here by looking at these medications that the blip or increase in Parkinson's disease in people under 40 years old is easily explained by the use of psychiatric medications for ADHD. And so this is really an incredible thing to condemn a poor kid to, a life of Parkinson's disease, just because he fidgets a bit or maybe is a disciplinary problem. So it's really, to my mind, a shocker. So you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul Channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit VitalityCapsules.com and get your free gift, Remedies So Powerful They May Make Antibiotics Obsolete. And that is VitalityCapsules.com. I welcome your calls and questions. Please call in at 914-338-0695. Okay. So now let's take a look at treatments for Parkinson's disease. First of all, before we look at treatments, let's understand. Mainstream medicine says, and I quote, this is from the mainstream website like WebMD, I believe, and they say, although no treatment has proven to slow down or stop the progression of Parkinson's disease, some treatment options can significantly alleviate symptoms. So they didn't say some treatment options do significantly alleviate symptoms. No, they said some treatment options can significantly alleviate symptoms. So these treatments include medications, lifestyle changes, and surgery, among others. However, a healthcare provider will consider several factors before recommending a particular treatment plan. Okay, so a healthcare provider is going to make a recommendation here, so they say. And so, again, remember, there's no treatment proven to slow down or stop the progression of Parkinson's disease. And whenever the treatment includes medications, lifestyle changes, and surgery, the reason that there's surgery is because the recommended medications and lifestyle changes are not very effective. So whenever you see surgery as a treatment for a disease, it is a red flag that the available therapy is pretty ineffective. And the other thing I would look at when I was practicing medicine is if the drug came out and the therapeutic range for the drug was between one milligram to, say, 5 milligrams, and then the next year the range would be 5 milligrams to 20 milligrams and 10 milligrams to 80 milligrams, that indicated to me that the drug was ineffective and that the increased dosages were being recommended because, of course, the lower doses are not effective. But the increased doses cannot be expected to work any better than the lower doses. Why? Because the fundamental problem is that the drug is simply not effective for the condition for which it's being prescribed. But that takes a fair amount of sophistication and years in the business to pick up on that pattern. But that's something to note. If the doctor has a drug that has a range of 1 milligram to 80 milligrams in terms of dosing, then that drug is unlikely to be effective at all. All right, so let's take a look at these drugs. What do we have? Let's start with a popular one, Albuterol. Now, Albuterol is a generic name, Selegiline. That's a tongue twister. And its brand name is Albuterol or Zelepar or MSAM. They're all the same. This is an anticholinergic. What does that mean? It means it mimics a certain neurotransmitter that the brain creates. And so it's believed in in Parkinson's, that there is an imbalance between dopamine and anticholinergics. And so the drugs attempt to reestablish that balance. All right. So Albuterol is one such drug. So what can you expect if you take Albuterol? Well, if you take Albuterol, you can expect, first of all, it's an MAO inhibitor, but you can expect possibility of a seizure, a stroke, hallucinations, painful urination, colitis. So here you are, you have a shuffly gait, you can't walk very fast, and now you're going to have sudden and frequent bowel movements. It sounds like a recipe for an accident to me. Definite quality of life issue. You can expect to get confused, become hostile, paranoia, have more difficulty walking than you already had from your basic Parkinson's, and even had a reported case, 72-year-old man who took this drug and started dressing like a woman. And when they stopped the drug, he no longer felt the need to dress up like a woman. So it has global effects on a person's reasoning and behavior. And also you can get heart attacks, hypertension, fainting, and atrial fibrillation. Those are serious effects. But what about the minor effects? You know, I don't want to be negative. Well, minor effects are constipation, insomnia, back pain, mouth sores, difficulty swallowing, dry mouth, itchy skin, rash, herpes, fungal infection, skin cancer, eczema, and urinary tract infection. And if you're a woman, you could start having very heavy periods and you could get breast cancer. This sounds like a tough drug to take. And also you can get bronchitis, bruising, anemia, muscle pain, broken bones from really just increased osteoporosis and osteopenia, basically your bones dissolve. And if you've been listening to this program from the beginning, you'll recall that Albuterol has shown up before as a cause of a suicide. And it can also cause awful body odor, diabetes, and dehydration. So this is what we might call a bad actor. But these are serious side effects that can and do occur. And the estimation is that approximately 70% of people who take this drug are going to get side effects of one type or another. So this is a serious gamble for a person whose quality of life is, one, deteriorated by their disease, that would be Parkinson's disease. But even worse than that, they know that they have to look forward to a continual deterioration in their quality of life. And then to add a drug like this, which it appears accelerates that deterioration, can almost be seen as cruel. Now why? You'd ask, why would a doctor do this? The doctor would do this because, of course, it's the standard of care. But then you have to ask, why would someone write a standard of care that would involve using a drug like this for an illness whose profile is very similar to the side effects of this drug? Well, the answer, of course, is once the Elbitril fails, then you get to add more drugs. And then once they all fail, then you get to do surgery, which is even more profit-enhancing. So this is a definite slippery slope here. With the unfortunate individual, being, as my father would say, taken for a ride. That's another story. So that's one drug, which is Elbitril. The next drug is Rayquip. Now, Rayquip is really an interesting drug. Now, Rayquip is recommended to be combined with carbidopa and levodopa or Sinemet. We'll talk about Sinemet a little later. But Rayquip is another drug that's supposed to be added to Sinemet. With Elbitril, it's designed to possibly work alone. And with all those side effects, you really probably wouldn't want to mix it with too much. So Rayquip is interesting. Rayquip has gastrointestinal side effects. And if you add up all the gastrointestinal side effects, 60% of the people who take it, 12% to 60%, we'll take it at 60%, will get nausea, 12% are going to vomit, 7% are going to get abdominal pain, 6% are going to be constipated, 5% are going to get indigestion, 5% are going to get diarrhea, 4% are going to lose their appetite, 3% are going to stink up the room, that's called flatulence. And they think that these side effects might be decreased by taking the drug with food. And, of course, there's a list of other, those are minor side effects experienced by about 80% of people who take this. However, you can still be at risk for abdominal distension, gastric disorder, stomach bleeding, polyps in your stomach, stomach pain, stomach infection, hemorrhoids, irritable bowel syndrome, and again, loose stools. So this is someone who can't ambulate very quickly because they do have Parkinson's as part of the disease, and you're going to give them frequent, unpredictable, watery stools. Acute pancreatitis, which is severe abdominal pain, just indescribable. Rectal hemorrhage, which is bleeding from their butt. Reflux esophagitis, biliary pain, throwing up blood, and a blocked salivary duct. And all these have been reported. Now, what about the nervous system? The nervous system side effects for Rayquip are very real. 34% are going to have dyskinesia. What's that? That's a fancy word for difficulty moving, which is a fancy word for worsening of Parkinson's symptoms, because the basic problem with Parkinson's is that the person is having difficulty coordinating their gait and keeping their balance. And so you're going to give them this drug, which treats their illness in some way, but it's going to give 34% of them an issue by worsening their gait. 26% are going to get dizziness. 17% are going to get headache. 10% are going to fall. And that's not a trivial thing when you're falling and you're stiff and you can't put your hands out to catch yourself. This is going to be a real fall. Hypokinesia, which is slow movement in general. Hypesthesia, which is difficulty with sensation, and dizziness and neuralgia, involuntary muscle contractions, again, a Parkinson's symptom, and abnormal coordination, and coma, stupor, seizures, and grand mal convulsions, which is bigger seizures, and of course stroke, paralysis of half the body. So these are side effects from Rayquip taken for Parkinson's, and this is just, again, given in therapeutic dose as directed following the standard of care. And so this unfortunate person with Parkinson's subjected to the standard of care can expect to be pretty overwrought. Time for station identification. You are listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit VitalityCapsules.com and get your free gift, natural remedies that are so powerful it could make antibiotics obsolete. And these are the very herbal formulas I used when I was in medical practice that made it possible for me to stop reaching for the prescription pad when people had infections. And so that's at VitalityCapsules.com, and you can get your free report. It's important to mosey on over and get that because we're going to change the report pretty soon. And the call-in number is 914-338-0695. Now, Rayquip side effects don't stop there. Of course, there are psychiatric effects. There have been 60 cases of sudden onset of sleep. Now you say, what's the deal? Well, this is serious because actually two of these cases have been reported to have led to fatal car accidents. And so it's shocking to me that this drug is prescribed and people aren't told, hey, you know what, you could fall asleep suddenly behind the wheel taking this drug. If you're going to take this drug, then you have to not drive. What do you want to do? Do you want to drive a car? Or do you want to take this drug? And so people aren't given that option. Instead, what the package insert recommends is patients should be advised that sudden sleep has been reported without warning signs. And they should be warned against driving or performing other activities that might create danger if sudden sleep were to occur. And so if drowsiness or sudden sleep does occur, patients should advise that they should immediately contact their physician. So how do you contact your physician when you've suddenly lost consciousness? I guess maybe when you wake up you should give a ring. But definitely this is a serious situation because people are not only killing themselves, but they're creating, you know, serious driving accidents. I mean, it's worse than alcohol, or at least as bad. And called psychiatric side effects includes sleepiness, as we mentioned above, and this is 40%. So 40% of people taking this drug are going to experience sleepiness, 9% confusion, 6% hallucination, and all these things. If you're going to drive a car, you know, it can get pretty dicey. And, of course, amnesia in 3% and impaired concentration 2%. And so they do say that the hallucinations are dose-dependent. Now, it goes a little more than this. A person gets anxiety, depression, irritability, sleep disorder. Now, depression and sleep disorder are symptoms of Parkinson's, and so these are Parkinson's-related symptoms that this drug is expected to worsen. Agitation, depressed mood, disorientation, early awakening, loss of sex drive, mood swings, nervousness, panic attacks, aggressive behavior, stress symptoms, and, of course, suicide attempts. And increased gambling, compulsive gambling, if you can believe that. And, of course, there's heart issues. Those of you who listen to my episode on heart disease know that this is one of the drugs that increases your risk of heart attack. But also, it can cause fainting from a cardiac origin, which means the heart doesn't pump enough blood to get blood to the brain. It gives new meaning to that expression, your elevator doesn't go all the way to the top. And people can pass out when they stand up. The fancy name for that is orthostatic symptoms. And it can actually bring on high blood pressure or hypertension. It can bring on low blood pressure, palpitations, tachycardia, atrial fibrillation. And in medical parlance, it's, I mean, as a layperson who's not been properly educated, who's not gone to medical school, you might say, why give a drug that causes all these troubles? Well, these are not troubles from the professional point of view. These are economic opportunities. The person has a heart issue. We have all kinds of drugs that can treat hypertension, all kinds of things to treat a fast heart, atrial fibrillation. So these are all medical opportunities in terms of the primary care doctor, oh, now needs to refer to the cardiologist who kind of takes it from there. And when I was first in medical school, that was as a transition time, 79 to 83. When I first got there, 79, is the word was, you should never, ever give a drug with side effects so bad, you've got to prescribe a second or third drug. So if the drug's going to have that kind of side effects, might as well not prescribe it. And if you did prescribe that drug and just prescribed more drugs to cover up the side effects, that was called polypharmacy. That was a bad thing and a sign of incompetence. That was 1979. Well, by 1982, the tune had changed substantially. The tune was this. As long as we have a drug, surgery, or therapy available to treat the side effect, then you should go ahead and prescribe the drug, simply monitor it, so when the side effect occurs, you can send the patient to the proper specialist for treatment of the side effect. And I was just on my way out of medical school when that edict came down. Or actually, I did a joint degree program with a medical degree and an MBA. And so I was spending a year in the business school, so I didn't get thoroughly indoctrinated in that particular thought process. But that's the way that that's the newest in medical philosophy. Now, also, this drug causes immunologic side effects, which is viral infection. Now, this is a huge, huge, huge euphemism. The viral infection we're talking about is herpes, which is when you get a sore in your genital area or in your lip, we call it herpes. Or when you get shingles, we call it herpes zoster. And so these are viral infections. And so these people with Parkinson's disease are getting this extremely painful, painful viral infection. And this is a lot of suffering added to the fact that they already have Parkinson's disease. So general side effects include tiredness, pain, swelling of the leg. Swelling of the leg is just incredible medical evaluation to determine if it's the kidney, if it's the liver, if it's the heart, where's the swelling coming from. And so that's a huge medical evaluation in terms of money generated for hospitals. Chest pain, get a whole big cardiac workup over that, 4% are going to get that. And in case you're vain, you're going to get varicose veins if you're worried about your looks. And respiratory effects include, these appear, you know, pretty minor, a sore throat, stuffy nose, sinus infection, bronchitis, cough, dyspnea. We call these minor infections. I mean, there is a chance of getting pneumonia and pulmonary edema, which, are, of course, are more serious. So you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit VitalityCapsules.com and get your valuable report, Remedies So Powerful They Could Make Antibiotics Obsolete. And that's VitalityCapsules.com. As always, your questions and calls are welcome. Please call in at 914-338-0695. Now, very quick, doesn't stop there. In case you thought your vision would be spared, not so. So 6% are going to get blurred vision or abnormal vision, difficulty seeing. And 2% are going to get double vision. And there's conjunctivitis, abnormal tear formation, swollen eyelids, glaucoma, abnormal accommodation, eye pain, light sensitivity, eye irritation, reduced visual acuity, and holes in the visual field where the person just is not able to see. So it really affects the eyes, and that's, of course, a lot of work for the ophthalmologist. Because, of course, you have to investigate. Do a full investigation. Is this real or is it memoric? So is this a symptom of another disease or is it just a side effect of the person's Parkinson's therapy? And so metabolic side effects include weight loss or weight gain, either a blood sugar that's too low or a blood sugar too high. It actually can give you diabetes, increased thirst, elevated potassium, and sometimes elevated potassium can be fatal, increased CPK, which is a protein used to determine if someone has a heart attack. So this drug can give a person chest pain and give them a false positive result on their test that's commonly done to check for a heart attack. And then for urinary symptoms, a person can get impotence, a woman can lose her periods, or she can have vaginal hemorrhage, vaginal infections. Guys can get prostate disorders, perineal pain, pain with urinating, nighttime urination, renal stones, breast enlargement, breast infection. Women can have hemorrhages in the uterus and acute renal failure. That means you can end up needing dialysis, which is definitely no fun. And these are all problems, side effects that can come from this particular medication. But it doesn't stop there. You know, there's some side effects that can't even classify, so they call them other. And they recommend that Rayquip be administered with levodopa, which is the baseline drug given for this issue, with Parkinson's disease, rather. But, you know, 34% can, again, have problems with movement, nausea, 30%, 26% can get dizziness, sleepiness, hallucinations, and falls. And it can really just totally destroy a person's quality of life. And, you know, the way things go, the person goes to the doctor, doctor diagnoses Parkinson's, the patient's so happy. I'm like, doctor, thank you so much for being a competent, caring doctor. I'm so glad you're on the ball. You're keeping up. I'm so glad that you're up with the latest medications. What do you recommend? He says, well, you know, there's this drug, Rayquip, which is a very good drug, and I recommend that you start with that. And as a person just starts taking this drug, they just get more and more effects, more and more of these things happen. And, of course, the patient is told, well, these are side effects, these are undesirable effects, these are unintended effects. Therefore, you can see if you can bear up under them. And this really points out the issue that there is no such thing as a side effect, simply an effect of the drug. And in many cases, as you can see in this case, the undesirable effects are far more likely than the desired therapeutic effect. And this is unfortunately the case with most drugs. And there's musculoskeletal side effects, which we've pretty much covered, aches and pains, joint stiffness, swelling, muscle contracture, twitching, rotator cuff syndrome, sacroiliitis, which is a fancy word for low back pain. And, you know, you can imagine if you have this issue and then you have on top of it low back pain. And skin effects, such as night sweats, rash, itchiness, seborrhea, psoriasis. And in the blood, people can have clotting of their platelets. And so when these platelets clot and clump, they're not enough platelets, and a person can be more prone to bleeding. And it can cause also B12 deficiency, as well as leukocytosis, which is excessive white cells and not enough white cells. So it's got the gist of this. This is pretty dismal stuff here. And, you know, I could go through the more stuff. There's pages and pages, but I won't because it's more of the same. So let's take a look at another perspective. What about other causes? Like, this is a natural perspective of Parkinson's disease. You know, I always think about what's really going on here. And I think the one thing, the real clue here is that whites have this issue more than blacks. And I'll tell you one thing that happened. Well, first of all, let's talk about what Mayo Clinic says. Mayo Clinic says that the environmental factor most linked with Parkinson's disease is exposure to pesticides and herbicides. So how do you get exposed to a high level of chemicals that kill pesticides and that kill herbs and weeds? And guess what? It's the lawn care service. That's right. So if you have a lawn care service, you are in serious doo-doo, a serious risk of Parkinson's disease. Now, when I was a kid growing up in the ghetto, there really wasn't much grass. And a little bit of grass we did have, there was really no social status associated with having a weed-free lawn. Now, my father was very obsessed with growing roses out front, but that's it, roses. He wasn't too keen on the grass and this and that and the edging and all that other stuff. So all I did was grow roses. Apparently, it was pretty easy to do because we never had any kind of chemicals at all around the house. And there were six kids, and we never, ever cleaned anything, so we didn't have any cleaning agents. So a very chemical-free environment. Now, so then I went to college, grew up, came back to the neighborhood, and really nothing much had changed. Well, as time went on, I guess it was year five of my medical practice, a little later, year seven, all these flyers show up in the neighborhood. Lawn care service, you know, hire so-and-so service to kill every weed in your lawn, and now you'll be a better person and see achieve higher social status, even though you still live in this awful ghetto. I said, huh, that's really dumb. Who would pay to have chemicals sprayed in their lawn? Boy, was I wrong. So I go visit my brother's house, which is a few blocks down the way, and Hess and his wife signed up for the Poison Yourself with the Lawn Care Service program. And so I expect that pretty soon we're going to find that the black-white disparity is going to pretty much disappear as more African-Americans adopt this social or cultural practice of having a lawn service and spraying the lawn with chemicals. And as a corollary to that, diet and convenience items, and also cleaning items, and things like dry cleaning, and the chemicals associated with dry cleaning, all of these things are potential neurotoxins and can destroy the nerves and can give rise to Parkinson's disease. Now, some of you probably have heard about the genetic proclivity or genetic trends in terms of Parkinson's disease. While there are genetic markers for Parkinson's disease, they're not very good predictors. And even the conventional medical doctors say, well, you know, there are conventional genetic markers. They don't seem to be have a strong predictive value as we had hoped. And so we're not giving these things very, very much weight, which appears to be a reasonable thing to do under the circumstances. So let's be positive here. What can one do for Parkinson's disease? Well, my personal experience with Parkinson's disease fits the bit of the demographics, which is that it definitely is a man's disease, more men than women, than my observation. In fact, I haven't had a woman patient with Parkinson's disease, only men. Because of my practice location, my patients, even though they were male, were African American. But they were middle class, they lived in the suburbs, and they had lawn services, actually. At the time, I didn't realize the correlation. So how do you get this person to stop stumbling and tripping and get rid of all their at least their symptoms? Because, again, modern medicine has no cure for this. All we can do is improve the symptoms. So let's take a look at it in a kind of straightforward manner. Well, first of all, if we know that the herbicides and pesticides are part of the issue, just cease and desist. So fire the lawn care service, and or if you insist on having one, tell them no chemicals. They may mow the weeds, they can pull the weeds, but they may not poison the weeds. And as far as the insects go, you're just going to have to live with them and use archaic means like netting or something along those lines to reduce your exposure to the insects. But the insecticides and herbicides are definitely going to poison your nervous system. The next thing to do is obviously eat organic. This is a condition where it's very straightforward that it's these herbicides and pesticides, and so eating organic is a definite plus. Now, organic contains about one-third the chemicals and pesticides of regular produce, but every bit helps. So definitely at least go organic. But I found on top of that, you have to have unprocessed food. So even though if you eat organic, we're talking no rice milk, no soy milk, no health bars, none of the processed organic foods, because you're not going to make progress with this illness if you eat those things. Then you have to increase your water, poop more. It means have more bowel movements. Yep, 3 a day. Now, because my patients were men, they uniformly refused to do enemas and refused to do colonics. And I think just because men have a prostate gland, which sits pretty close to the rectal opening, and a lot of times when they try to do an enema, that tube is uncomfortably hits up against the prostate, and navigating around the prostate is it's a little tricky, especially, again, talking about older men over 60, the prostate's more likely to be enlarged. So these guys did not do that, but they did use Vitality Capsules, which are available at vitalitycapsules.com. But any way that you want to poop more will be fine. You can use Vitality Capsules, you can use buckthorn, you can use castor oil. There's all kinds of ways to poop more. Poop more is the definite, get her done. Just have to make it happen. Next is it's increased the circulation of blood to the nerves. And my favorite for this is cayenne, turmeric, or ginger. Those are all great aids to the circulation, and they're going to get more blood circulating to the nerves, give these nerves a better blood supply to take the chemicals away that are poisoning them and to bring oxygen and nutrition to the nerves that can help repair them. Then, of course, you have to put something in your diet to increase your nerve repair. And my favorite for that is rosemary. Unlike ginkgo, rosemary not only stops the damage to nerves, but actually helps your body make more nerve cells. Yes, really exciting. And the dose for that is a teaspoon a day. Don't go over a teaspoon a day. But a teaspoon a day is the dose. And you can either grind it into a powder. Notice I say you can grind it into a powder, so you can buy the sticks, little twigs, and grind them. Or you can pour boiling water over the 1 teaspoon of rosemary, let it steep for 5 minutes or so, and drink the tea. I don't think it's very tasty, but it doesn't taste that bad. Next is you need to take omega-3s. You've got to really bump that up. My favorite recommendation on that is flaxseed, the brown ones, not the gold, and 1/4 cup of flaxseed and 1 cup of water. Soak overnight, stir, drink the next morning. And with this omega-3 combined with the rosemary, you know, you're really going to improve your nerves mending and repairing themselves. And finally, B12, 1,000 mcg, that's 1,000 micrograms, or 1 milligram, they're both the same, under the tongue daily. And so that's your basic nutrition plan. Food-wise, I generally recommend people stop eating meat until they reach their health goal, and then they can, as judiciously or carefully, add meat back to their diet and see how it goes. My experience with Parkinson's is that while people are getting themselves fixed up, they give up the meat completely. That works the best. And usually in about 6 to 12 weeks, they're pretty much back to normal. And their spouses report that they can do everything that they did before they became ill, which is really very nice. And then the last thing a person needs is a parasite kill program. There does seem to be a component of parasites in Parkinson's disease. And my favorite, of course, is the Candida Cleaner. That's my personal favorite, and that's at candidacleaner.com. I like it because it's only twice a week, and side effects are minimal, actually non-existent, if you follow directions. The other option is high-dose garlic. And high-dose garlic is pretty high dose. It's 1 to 3 teaspoons a day. And you can take it any way you want to. You can stir it in water, drink it down. You can make a tea out of it, drink it down. You can cook with it, but putting it in water or making a tea out of it seems to work the best. And definitely start with 1 teaspoon and work your way up. Side effect there is bruising. You can get bruising from garlic. My next favorite is high-dose vitamin C. Again, 1 teaspoon to 1 tablespoon a day. Do not mix garlic and vitamin C. You have to take your pick. And the high-dose vitamin C can cause bruising or diarrhea. So start with 1 teaspoon a day, an inch your way up, and when you notice some bruising or you notice loose stools, then stop, cease, and desist. You've reached your maximum dose, and that's your daily dose. And, of course, this is not medical advice. We do not teach this in medical school. And disclaimer here. This is not designed to treat, cure, or prevent any disease. And the station, like radio, or me, Dr. Daniels, or Everyday Vitality, my company, accept absolutely no responsibility for any action you may take based on this broadcast. So that is really my read on Parkinson's disease. The big aha is that the kids, the drugs kids are getting for ADHD may be creating the epidemic we're seeing of Parkinson's disease in the under 40 crowd. And the other aha is that, you know, your lawn care service may be putting you at risk. People have questions. We have like 4 more minutes. I'd be happy to take questions. Just click the 1 there on your telephone. And then I can see your thing light up, and I'll click on you and answer any questions that you have. So Parkinson's disease is touted as no cause, obviously no cure. There are epidemiological footprints that we can see to help us see or deduce what might be causing it, what might be leading to it. And I think having a kid with ADHD might be a disappointment, but having a young adult with Parkinson's disease is, I think, absolutely devastating. Definitely not worth that particular price. And again, all these drugs we talked about are drugs. The effect of creating Parkinson's disease is not something that might happen. It's something that actually does happen, something that is happening. And anyone who takes these drugs has a definite risk, a very real, as we say in medical school, finite risk, which means measurable risk, of actually contracting Parkinson's disease, which is really not any fun at all to have. All right, we have a question here. I'm sorry, I don't see your number.
Dr. Daniels?
Hi, you're on the air. Yes.
Hi, it's Sandy. You had mentioned the garlic versus the vitamin C and not mixing those. I, you know, juice garlic usually in the morning, afternoons, and then sometimes I'll have in the evening, a juice with grapefruit juice and all of that. So is it more just to prevent less chance of diarrhea and things like that, or is there any other effect that would
Bleeding. Prevent bleeding and prevent diarrhea. So you don't just get bleeding. Before you bleed, you get bruising. And so you can just take your thumb and press on your forearm and let go. And if there's a bruise there, you've got easy bruising. Also, if you're brushing your teeth and you notice your gums are bleeding, that's a side effect of garlic and or vitamin C.
Oh, okay.
So you do get early warning.
But it could be, that's just a sign. It doesn't necessarily mean that's what it is. I mean, you could have, right? I mean, because I do sometimes get bleeding when I floss my teeth.
No, I would not take it that way. If I knew I was taking a lot of garlic and I was brushing my teeth and they were bleeding, I would cut back my garlic until the bleeding stopped.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the kind of thinking that causes people in medicine to drop dead, and we don't want to apply the same thinking to herbal medicine or it will become dangerous too.
And I don't have it that often. I noticed, you know, if I floss regularly, it's not an issue, you know. So sometimes I think it's just the consistency of flossing if I get busy and whatnot. So, you know, if the gums have been haven't been, you know, flossed for a while. So.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye. All right. Let's see if we have any other questions. Okay. Wonderful. Thank you very much, everyone. And we'll see you again next week. And our topic next week will be death by a thousand cuts. And we'll talk about how just going to your routine doctor visits can lead to homicide. All right, great. We'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.
Make believe.